Hello, today I'm speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Everson. We're going to be talking about peak oil. What is it, and what does the future hold without citizen and government intervention? We know that clean, renewable energy is what we need to protect the remaining health of the planet, for sure. But can we organize clean energy and vehicle technology fast enough to move away from fossil fuels? Can we do this in the upcoming years? By talking to Jeff, we're going to get a lot of insight into peak oil and the industry. So, hello, Jeff.
Good morning.
Please go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background.
Before starting a consulting practice, I was the Director of Business Development at Kinetic North America, which is formerly Forrester Miller in Waltham, Massachusetts. My work there included contracts with a major North American gas producer in Houston, as well as contracts with the Department of Defense and the Department of Transportation. Business development work includes conducting detailed technology and market studies on coal gasification, solar energy, electric grid, wind turbines, and robotic inspection of natural gas pipelines. There's a blog on my website devoted to numerous energy issues, and my website is www.jheversonconsulting.com. Postings on this blog will be a work in progress effort to figure out what is possible on a time and cost scale to provide a sustainable energy future.
Jeff, please let us know what exactly is peak oil?
Peak oil is reached in the case of oil production when a well or a region reaches maximum production and then declines thereafter.
Okay, so are we facing, in your estimation, peak oil all over the world, or is this mostly in the United States?
Peak oil production has been reached in the lower 48 states back in 1970, Gulf of Mexico in 2002, and Alaska in 1988. As for the rest of the world, a couple of examples, the UK and the Norwegian sectors of the North Sea reached peak oil production about 10 or 15 years ago, and Mexico has passed peak production. That occurred around 2003.
Okay, so you name some areas that they have hit peak oil production and they're on the decline. What about new sources, geographically speaking, world around the world? Are there new sources of petroleum?
Yes, there are new sources. To the north of us is Canada, namely the Canadian tar sands. There are some new sources possibly coming online in Brazil. In Africa, there's Uganda, there's some relatively new oil there. Kenyan oil was recently discovered within the last year or so. And of course, the oil standby sources, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Russia, and Venezuela.
Interesting. Now, as we talk about oil for the U.S. specifically, I know that Canada competes with Mexico sometimes for second place. What are our sources mainly? From which countries does our oil come from?
We obtain imported oil from probably a couple dozen countries. The top five are Canada, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Venezuela, and Nigeria.
Do American oil companies produce most of its oil for Americans?
It's a worldwide market, and so they tend to sell wherever they can get the most for their product. Just to give you a quick example, the United States produces about 2 billion barrels of oil per year and imports 3 billion.
Wow, that's interesting. So, American oil companies aren't particularly patriotic. This is capitalism at its finest, of course, and they sell to the highest bidder around the world,
Correct.
even though the U.S. government subsidizes their operations.
Correct again.
How much do we export roughly right now, if you can estimate in terms of volume and percent? And to whom? Do you have any idea?
We export very little crude oil, but we do export with increasing amounts of gasoline and also home heating oil. The gasoline exports have increased about 50% roughly in the last year and a half, and over 200%, say, going out 3 or 4 years. And middle distillate fuels such as home heating oil, that's being exported as well.
Yeah. Now, is that predominantly China and India where those economies are growing so quickly?
In the case of exported gasoline, I was kind of surprised to learn that most of the exported gasoline goes to Mexico, Central, and South America.
Interesting. What is our government telling the public about oil and its availability, please, right now? And maybe if you could address that from both of our political parties, both the Democrats and the Republicans, what are they telling us?
Basically, they're telling us we're okay. The Obama administration frequently shows the oil production graph for the lower 48 states going back, say, the last 10 years. If you go from 2000 to 2005, the oil production domestically was decreasing, and as recent times, it's now starting to increase, primarily due to the Bakken Reservoir in Montana and North Dakota.
So how much of what we're required to have for fuel is that Bakken? You said Bakken Reservoir providing, please.
Probably maybe 4 or 5%. And to look at it another way, Bakken now produces about 500,000 barrels of crude oil a day. On the other hand, the United States consumes about 15 million barrels of oil, crude oil per day.
Wow.
So if you take the ratio of 500,000 to 15 million, it's a small number.
It's a dent, yeah. Well, what are some of the alternative sources of fossil fuels? And you did just touch upon it earlier in terms of the tar sands, but there's coal and shale. Are these viable ways to offset peak oil?
Well, there's the Canadian tar sands, and we get about 20% of our crude oil from Canada, and about 40% of that, I believe, is due to tar sands. Problem, there's a huge environmental impact on tar sands, but we can get to that later on if you like.
Yeah.
Another alternative. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please continue.
Another source that's come online in the last few years is shale gas that's being produced from the Appalachian Mountain area, Pennsylvania, some in Ohio. And that's been achieved by horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as fracking, that involves pumping millions of gallons of water downhole along with some chemicals and another thing called proppants, little beads, to be pushed into the pores to make the pores in the shale even larger so that the shale gas can flow.
Right. Now, these processes, they're extremely environmentally destructive processes. We know that. For one, I'm not in favor of propagating any of the petroleum-based fuels down the road. But, you know, frankly, is any of this efficient? These processes sound incredibly energy intensive. Can you address that?
Yes, they are. There's the whole business of getting the water in huge billions of gallons available to pump downhole, and the energy it takes to transport that water and get it in place, the energy required to operate the equipment, the pumping and all the rest of it. And you also have similar energy problems in Canada, namely in Alberta, the Fort McMurray tar sands strip mining. That requires huge, vast amounts of water, and then you have to heat it up and convert the first of all, you have huge shovels and large trucks that consume a lot of energy just to move the tar sands around. And once you extract the tar sands, say, by surface mining, then that has to be the bitumen, that is the oil that's embedded in the tar sands, that has to
right.
be separated.
Right, right. So guess what you're saying is that our requirement for fuel, for example, to run our vehicles in the U.S., drives these incredibly inefficient and environmentally destructive processes. They're willing to do it because they'll get paid to do it, and it certainly won't ever be cost efficient either. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
That was a loaded question, huh? Well, I just think about the silly things that we all do, when you go to do your grocery shopping and you bring $2 worth of coupons because the store will accept that, but you spend an extra $3 to get to that particular supermarket. I mean, we do things like that all the time. It wouldn't be shocking to me to find out that it was completely inefficient to get that alternative fossil fuel. Can you make any suggestion about what the media, and I suppose the long view might be that? What should we be telling the public about peak oil? What's the truth about this? Is there a good reason for the public to know this, to take action?
Well, I think it would be helpful to be honest with the public and get them on board, and this is going to require something of a media campaign in order to pull it off. And I don't think the government's being particularly upfront about two conditions there with regard to peak oil that involve the United States oil assets.
Right, right. And do you think that the oil industry is also paying, in a sense, to keep this information quiet or to keep it well under control?
Yeah, probably, because the oil industry spends millions of dollars every year lobbying Congress for their own interests. Plus, you may have noticed on television recently, in the last several weeks, if not longer, there's been a commercial supported by the American Petroleum Institute that basically there's a lady that walks across a map of the United States and points to the fact that we're getting Canadian tar sands, so that helps, and also points to shale gas. So basically she's saying we're all set, don't worry about anything.
Right, right, and we know that's not true. To kind of wind this up, I'm wondering, can you speak to the clean, renewable energy alternatives, the subsidies that are paying right now for oil industry production? Could those be applied alternatively to solar, photovoltaics, wind energy, and other such clean, renewable energy resources? I mean, could we create a tidal wave of clean, renewable energy and supplant the fossil fuels anytime in the near future?
Probably no time soon. The thing is, I'm all in favor of clean energy, solar, photovoltaic, and wind. You know, the fuel is free, obviously. But the problem with those two energy sources is that they're not really quite ready for prime time because federal and state governments support them with all kinds of tax credits and subsidies and so forth. And If you have to ask yourself the question, well, if they're really that great and wonderful, why do they need that level of subsidy? Well, the problem is that the cost of electricity, I won't get into all the details, but the cost of electricity from those sources exceeds the cost of electricity for what you pay now. If I could just give you one quick example.
Sure.
The average cost of electricity in the United States is about 10 cents per kilowatt hour. Here in Reading, I'm paying 14 cents per kilowatt hour. But if you look at the cost of electricity from solar photovoltaic and offshore wind, it's around 20 to 25 cents per kilowatt hour. So it's a lot more expensive.
Right. But if the case were that more money were funneled into speeding up the technology, when products become more available, the market drives a reduction in price for, say, solar panels or whatever, I mean, is it possible that things could be sped up a bit?
That's possible. Certainly with, manufacturing more of these things, the cost per item would come down. I think one of the things that's really critical is the technology needed to actually store electricity when it's not being used. So if you're getting electricity from a wind turbine or a solar photovoltaic panel, if you could store that electricity when it's not being used as much, you'd have a source of electricity in the form of a battery, if you later on.
Right. And that technology is improving all the time. I do stay on top of that a bit. And the ability to save the energy that's derived from the sun or wind, for example, is one of the most important pieces in that puzzle. But that's getting better all the time. So I'm really hopeful, Jeff.
In Germany, they have 17 nuclear power plants that they're going to get rid of in about 10 years. And they're going to totally replace that energy from wind and solar. And the Germans are working very hard on energy storage techniques, and they have collaborative agreements with the Japanese.
The German government heavily subsidizes its clean renewable energy.
They certainly do.
Industry, yeah. But the alternative is pollution and all of the bad things that come with petroleum-based products, frankly, and a lot of human and environmental health concerns. So, Jeff, at this juncture, what's next? I mean, what should we Americans be doing to prepare for some level of fuel crisis? Because I think that's what I'm hearing from you, is more of a crisis.
Yeah, sooner or later there will be a crisis because of, some conflict in the Middle East or some uprising or something like that, because we're so very dependent on imported foreign oil. I think we just need to be honest with ourselves and confront the fact that we are sitting on top of a declining oil assets. But we certainly need to recognize the problem first before we can carry on with any kind of planning and problem solving.
Right, right. Fair enough. And it's the best way still to approach care of the environment, sustainability, is conservation. Don't make it, don't use it. And to really think about, you know, the trips we make in our cars and multitask when we are out on the road, etc. So I know that is a big consideration. Americans, we have a hard time with that.
It's just so contrary to our consumer-oriented society, just to, you know, extract more and more minerals and resources from the earth, convert them into products, people buy it and so forth. And ultimately, that's not a sustainable way of life.
Right. Well, and that's what we're focused on here at The Long View. Thank you so much for this information. It's been really great talking to you, Jeff. Hope to have you again.
My pleasure, Isa.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thank you. For more information on this topic and other sustainability-related topics, please visit thelongview.org.